That's true. Everybody got their hankies, you know. Okay, opening to Genesis. We're going to go through the Bible tonight. Oh, goodness. We're going to take a look at the life of Joseph. There are several people in the Old Testament I love. I love their life. Joseph and David are... are two of my favorites, just because Joseph had the tenacity just to stick in there, and no matter what hit him, stood his ground. And then David, he went through some really hard times, but the thing is, because of his repentant heart and always turning back to God, God labeled him a man after my own heart. Boy, what a label. What a label. Anyway, we're going to look at the life of Joseph. And did Joseph have two God-inspired dreams where his family ended up bowing down to him? Of course he did. Yes. And did these dreams happen to come to pass over the next month? Did these dreams happen to come to pass over the next year? Did these dreams happen to come to pass over the next 5 years? No, no, no. And so you can go back sometime and read the story of his life, chapters 37 through 50 in Genesis. It's really quite interesting, very interesting. But, you know, he was only 17 years old when the Lord started revealing himself to him and started talking to him and gave him these two dreams, 17. And, you know, being the kid that he was so excited about this that, you know, he ran out and told his brothers and his dad. Well, his brothers couldn't stand the little brat because he was his father's favorite son. You know, even to the point of where his father showed favoritism, which is not a good thing to do in a family. And so, you know, he even made him a coat of many colors, you know, because of it. Because, you know, he was the son of his beloved wife. And so, anyway, this just stirred up a lot of animosity and a lot of hatred and a lot of just not good things within the family. And so Jacob got after him for, you know, being prideful and bragging about these dreams and basically saying, "You mean to tell me that I am going to bow before you?" You know, type of thing. Like, you know, the patriarch just does not bow to the children. You know, it's the other way around. And so one day Jacob sent Joseph. His brothers had gone off to, I think it was Dothan or out that direction, to let the sheep graze, you know, and they were moving them from pasture to pasture and stuff. And so Jacob wanted to know what was going on. And so he decided to send Joseph out and go check up on them and see what was happening. And so Joseph finally finds them. But before he got there, his brothers noticed he was coming because he had a very bright multicolored tunic on. And so they saw him coming. And this just, rage just took his brothers over, you know, because here comes this dreamer, you know. He thinks we're going to bow down to him, you know, and just all this hatred and everything started rising up and they started getting mad. Have you ever gotten so mad that you couldn't think straight? Have you ever been to that point of mad? This is the point of mad that they were at. They had finally had it. This tattletale, you know. You know how little, I don't know. I had two little brothers, you know. And so, you know, it was always, you know, the tattletaling. And he did this to me. He did that. And you know what they're doing. And so, you know, you could just imagine what Joseph was doing to his older brothers, you know. I'm sure it wasn't. And so they were just You know how families are. You have to kind of interject. Families are families. I don't care if they were back then or if they're today. Families are families. Siblings are siblings. Oh, so anyway, they start planning and plotting to get rid of them somehow. And only because of Reuben's intervention, they didn't kill him, because everybody else wanted to kill him and just do away with him. But he said, no, no, we can't do that. And so they put him down in this pit. They took off his tunic and put him in this pit and were kind of sitting around the campfire, you might say, well, what should we do with him for sure, you know? And so anyway, they saw these traders, Midianite traders, coming through. And so they thought, okay, let's sell him to Egypt. You know, let's sell him into slavery. You know, we'll just get rid of him. He'll be lost forever, you know. And so they sold him for 20 shekels of silver. Now, you think 20 shekels of silver is like, well, four years ago when I looked this up, 20 shekels 4 years ago in U.S. dollars was $142.62. So Joseph was sold into slavery for that amount of money. Really, it was a pittance, you know. And so then they took a goat, and they killed the goat, and they dipped his tunic in blood, and they took it back and told his father that he had been attacked by a wild animal and was ripped to shreds and ate, and there was nothing left of him but this coat. How could you live with yourself? Be in cahoots with your other 10 brothers, you know, and just keep this secret to yourself, you know, all this time. And then to see your father grieve so horribly over this son, just inconsolably, you know, it was just hardness of heart. Pure hardness of heart. Now Judah, you know, it really got to him, because shortly after that he had to leave. He left the country. He couldn't watch his dad anymore, you know, and two, he was running from himself. I believe if you read, you know, on in the story of Judah and Tamar and stuff. But he was running from God and running from himself because of this thing that had happened. So anyway, Joseph ends up in Egypt. You know, a lot of us, you know, tend to be like Joseph. God shows us something and we decide to go out and tell the entire world right away. When, you know, there's a timing of God in things. And when he shows us things for our lives, or he gives us a word or something, you know, wisdom would be to sit on it and pray over it and let God bring the revelation of that to you, you know, to us. And just kind of keep it to yourself instead of blabbing it everywhere, you know, because there is a growing time. There is a time to learn. There is a time of letting that be birthed within you to come forth. And so I remember when I was 18 years old, and I was supposed to go to Way of College, had registered and everything, supposed to go to Way of College. I was going to be a home ec teacher, and I was doing laundry one day, helping mom with laundry one day, and it was during the summer, right before I was supposed to go. And the Lord just spoke up to my heart and said, if you'll stay here. I had started attending a little folk gospel church, and he spoke to my heart, and he said, if you'll stay here, in 2 years I'll send you to Bible school. Stay here, attend the church, you know, and learn some more, and I'll send you to Bible school. I thought it was great. Well, when I told everybody I wasn't going to go to college then and become a teacher and all that kind of stuff, I didn't go over too well. Didn't go over too well at all. I mean, I had aunts and uncles mad at me. I had grandparents mad at me. I even had my best friend's mother mad at me. And they just, you know, thought it was awful that I wasn't going to go to college. And so I stayed home. I stuck to my guns and I stayed home. And it was tough. It was tough. I was almost disinherited from the family over this thing. Mainly because I got born again. And then I was going to go to school. You know. So, but you know what? In 2 years, he sent me to Rhema Bible Training Center. that's how I got acquainted with Oklahoma and fell in love with Oklahoma. And how I got here was I went to Rhema. I went to my first camp meeting, Kenneth Hagin camp meeting, and then I started school. So anyway, it all worked out. You know that teaching gift that was in me? Because I would help in high school. I love home ec was one of my favorite classes. Once they got rid of the really, really old lady and got fresh blood in, she made it really fun. And she had all kinds of different classes she was doing. It wasn't just your typical home ec stuff. But because I was like a junior and senior during that time, I had free hours. And so I would go down to the home ec classes and help her with the underclasses. And so, you know, I would teach people how to crochet. I taught people how to sew. I taught people cake decorating. You know, I would teach people lots of different things. And so God has taken that teaching gift within me. It took him a long time, but, you know, once I pushed past a lot of intimidation, but he has taken that teaching gift that has been buried within me, was within me, and now he's bringing it forth more and more and more. So even though I didn't go to college, I don't have a college degree, you know, it didn't matter to God. He still took that teaching gift. So no matter what happens in our lives, the trials, the setbacks, the tragedies, we need to keep hold of the vision that God has placed on the inside of us. We need to not let go of that. And worship is a major part of pushing through trials and tribulations and just whatever. I tell you, I wish I had known, excuse me, when I was first born again, more about this and more in learning and how to push through. Because worship is because when you go into worship, what worship does is turn your emotions. It turns your emotions towards God and lets God start working on them, you know. So anyway, just pulls us in closer to Him to where we can hear His voice more clearly and get that peace that we need just to calm down on the inside of us. So, Joseph finds himself in Egypt. Here he is, up on the slave block, the auction block. And Potiphar finds him up there, sees him up there, and decides to buy him, takes him home. And Potiphar is the chief of the Pharaoh's army, so a very, very well-to-do person. So, what did Joseph do? Did Joseph become bitter because he was in the predicament he was in? Did he get mad at Potiphar and decide to rebel and like, I'm not an Egyptian and I'm not going to succumb to this kind of stuff, you know? No, he didn't. I mean, I'm sure he was scared, he was upset and everything else. I mean, he's human. He was human. But you know what? He never let go of his dreams. He learned the Egyptian language. He learned their customs. He took on the manner of dress for the slave, an Egyptian slave. He didn't rebel. Even though he was in another man's world, not by his own doing, but was there, he allowed God to use him where he was at. And he allowed God to use him to effect a change in people's lives around him. Now, he didn't understand what was happening or anything like that, but all he knew was he had to hang on. He had to hang on to God. That was all he had. He had to hang on to God. And those words that you get, we've talked about it before, even Pastor talks about it a lot. Those words that you get, write them down. Keep them before your eyes. Read them often. Because that's God's will for you. That's God's plan for you. And you need to just get it down inside of you really, really good. Now, Joseph also had the gift of administration. He was very good in administration. And he was very gifted in getting things done proficiently. So Joseph became a very much trusted and faithful servant of Potiphar. Even though he was in this situation, he decided he was going to be the best that he could be. Even though he was a slave, he was going to be the best slave that he could be because he was doing it unto the Lord. Just as integrity and trust between people on this earth produces integrity produces trust between people here on the earth, it's the same thing with God. God's watching us to see if he can trust us with things. He's looking at us to see if we'll be faithful with things. Potiphar trusted Joseph to the point of where he didn't even check up on him. He just knew if he gave Joseph an assignment, it was going to get done. It was going to get done properly. And everything was going to be in order right down to the nth degree, you know. Everything was lined out. And so, see, God's watching us for the same type of trust in us because he wants to give us more authority. He wants to give us more authority, more responsibility. But if we're not faithful in the little things that he gives us to do, something as simple as hearing his voice during offering, or you might be at a restaurant or something and he says something to you, that couple over there is going through divorce, I want you to go over there and just give them a word of encouragement. You know, I mean, minor little things that you might brush off. He's looking to see those little things. Because you know what? Those little things, you'll have greater things. If you're faithful in the little things, greater things you'll have. And that was like Joseph. So, not only was God watching Joseph, but Potiphar's wife was watching Joseph also. And she lusted after him in a big time way. And so she decided that she wanted Joseph. She wanted to get him into bed, and there wasn't any two ways about it. This is just how it was going to be. And so Joseph, he was so thankful to his master. He just wanted, he wasn't going to do that to him. His master was very good to him. He wasn't going to hurt his master like that. And so he left, you know, but she had hold of his coat. And so anyway, now, here it goes down. She falsely accuses of Joseph of making advances at her. He ends up in prison. Potiphar, of course, is not going to be ashamed, so he's going to stand by his wife. A servant, he's not going to stand up for a slave. So he ends up in prison again. Okay, here he is. His brothers, a few years ago, dumped him in a pit and sold him into Egypt. And now here he is, after being so faithful. So faithful, he ends up in prison again, falsely accused. What would you do if you had tried so hard to put the past in the past and just do your very best for God, and you're going along minding your own business basically, and now you're in prison? And it's like, okay, God, you know, I thought I was, you know, I thought we had something good going here, and I thought nothing bad was going to happen to me. And the devil sitting on one side, you know, one little imp's over here and another little imp's over there, you know, and he's sitting in prison, you know, and wondering, okay, am I going to be killed because I made advances, you know, towards this man's wife? You know, all these thoughts could be going through your head. And I'm sure one little imp was going, so you had a dream, huh? And one little imp over here was going, heard God, huh? You know, and he's sitting there in prison. And so put yourself in that place, okay? Someone had done something horribly wrong to you. You worked your way through it, worked your way through it, worked your way through it, okay? Things are going pretty good, and you feel like, okay, God's on your side, and somebody comes behind you very quietly and you don't see it coming, and this pearl-handled knife goes straight into your back and it's twisted. Basically, that's what happened. What would you do? Would you sit and hold a grudge? Would you turn your face towards God? Would you, you know, plot revenge? I mean, you know, I'm sure all that stuff went through his mind. Even though Scripture doesn't give anything towards that, people are human. Things go through your mind, but it's what you do with the stuff that goes through your mind, if you're going to turn them towards God or not. So I'm sure this is where Joseph really came face to face with himself. All the bitterness from the past, I'm sure, just came flooding back, you know, everything that his brothers had done to him. Now this had happened to him. And he just had to probably shut his eyes and go, God, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what's happening, but I choose. Help me. I choose to turn my face to you. So he decides to make the best of it again. You know, a lot of people have wrong ideas about people in the Bible. And they almost get them up on these pedestals and think they were near perfect. You know, like Joseph was near perfect, David was near perfect. You know, all these people were near perfect. Moses, Abraham, you know. And they think that they didn't experience life like we do. Life is life. It might have been in a different country, a different era. But, you know, life is still life. Life happens to people. And so, you get to wondering, and you get to thinking, well, this must have happened in a matter of days, or this happened in just, you know, a few months, when a lot of stuff, it took years for these lives to play out that you read in a few chapters. It may have taken years. Well, this is with Joseph. It took years, his life playing out, and all of this stuff happening. And so, you know, he clung to God. He kept his dreams before him. He kept remembering his God. And God did not forget him. God did not forget him. You see, Joseph didn't have any hidden agendas. Not any hidden agendas at all. He just wanted to be obedient. He wanted to be faithful. And so, start from the bottom again. And so he got, you know, he just started doing what he needed to do. I'm sure it's like the innkeeper down there, or the prison keeper, I should say, not the innkeeper, the prison keeper, you know, he was faithful to serve him. I'm sure he'd go up to Joseph would go up to him and just like, let me help you with something here. I just want to be busy. Let me help you with something. Let me serve the food, or let me take out the slop buckets, or let me take water to the people, you know. And so he started being faithful and probably just volunteering to help this guy, you know, with his work. And before long, he's got so much favor with the prison keeper that Joseph is basically running the prison, and the guy's not even keeping up with him because he trusts him so much. A man of integrity, a man of his word. He did not have to do a thing. There's that administration again. Joseph gets in there and just gets the place organized. Can you imagine getting the prison organized? So anyway, you know, even in the worst of circumstances, God can come in and just, you know, do everything, make, you know, what the enemy intends for evil, you know, God turns it around for good. If we will just turn ourselves over to him, things are going to happen to us. Life is not always going to be a bed of roses. In Romans 5, why don't you turn over to Romans 5, chapter 1. I'm just going to go ahead and read it here. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we have access by faith into this grace in which we stand, and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. And not only that, I like that, and not only that, but we also glory in tribulation. I don't want to glory in tribulation. Knowing that
tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance, character, and character, hope. Now, hope does not disappoint because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us.
Now, tribulation. The word tribulation means trials, setbacks, and tragedies. Perseverance, to persist in a purpose or task despite the obstacles. Character, moral integrity, a good reputation. And hope is a wish or a desire accompanied by expectation of its fulfillment. So we can read verses 3 through 5 this way. But we worship during these trials and setbacks and tragedies, knowing that these trials, setbacks, and tragedies produces or causes us to persist in a purpose or our call despite the obstacles. Persisting in our purpose or call despite the obstacles produces moral integrity and a good reputation. Moral integrity and a good reputation produces a desire accompanied by expectation of its fulfillment. Now, this desire accompanied by expectation of fulfillment does not disappoint because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. I love at times to break it down because it just helps. It's like you do your own amplified version. It just helps clarify something to you. You know, often when we think it's the end, God is really only just beginning. Jesus can take you, he can take a nobody and bless you and use you if you will stay in the right spirit of love and forgiveness and caring for people and just stay humble before him. Doesn't matter, he will use you. Because of Joseph's attitude and his willingness to do his best, God gave him favor with that innkeeper. So that, like I said, he basically ran that prison. Now, while he was in prison, he interpreted two dreams for the chief butler and the chief baker. And both those dreams came true. One ended up dying. The butler was released, so the baker died. I believe he was beheaded and his body hung out for the birds. But the butler got out. His dream came true also. And on his way out, Joseph says, "Remember me. Please, please remember me. You know, I'm down here. You know, I'm doing a good job. You know, clemency, you know, like some would say these days. You know, I'm being good. I'm being good. Don't I get out for good behavior?" Well, anyway, did that happen? Not. No. The butler is just so happy to get out. He totally forgot about Joseph back there, you know. So 2 years later, two years later, the Pharaoh has a dream. Really, he has a couple dreams, very, very disturbing dreams, in which seven lean cattle eat seven fat cattle. And so it upset him so bad that he called in all his magicians and his people to tell him, you know, what is going on. Well, nobody could tell him or would try to tell him because they didn't want to risk their head on the chopping block. And so it was at that time this butler says, "Oh, King, oh, Pharaoh, I just remembered. There's a guy down in prison. He interpreted my dream and the baker's dream, and they both came true. Oh, this guy is still down there, you know?" And so they bring Joseph up. And so the king tells him of his dream. And Joseph interprets the dream. And so he tells the Pharaoh, he said, "Pharaoh, you need to find yourself a man full of wisdom and put him in charge of this so you can prepare for the famine that is to come." And the Pharaoh looks at him and said, "Basically, Joseph, you're the man. I believe you have told me the truth.
you know, you serve a God who is true, and I believe that, so I'm putting you in charge. And so you know what that meant? He was second in command only to the Pharaoh. He went from the dungeon. He went from being sold into slavery, 17 years old. He went through all this hell, and it was hell. 13 years of hell is what it was from the time he was 17 to 30 years old when he became second in command, only to Pharaoh. 13 years. And so, how many of us would hang in there for 13 years? How many people in the body of Christ would hang in there 13? How many would hang in there a year if their life was just nothing but, you know, setbacks and just things happening, you know, just the enemy coming at you? How many people would have the tenacity or the perseverance to hang on to no matter what? I'm just trying to get to me. I'm just trying to make y'all think. So he's 30 years old when he's made prime minister. You know, God can put you wherever you need to be for the job he has for you. He has a job for you to get done. He can put you anywhere he needs you. And it doesn't matter what the circumstances look like. If you stay humble before him, right attitude of heart, you're going to stay right on course for that mark he has for you and what he wants to fulfill. You know, we've been taught a lot of keys to the word, you know, worship and prayer and fasting and meditation of the word, reading the word, and all these things, applying them to our lives, just help us and help us to zero in and builds a trust between the Father and us. If we will do these things. Without knowledge of the word, you know, he really can't do a whole lot in our lives, because we have to have the word. The word is his heart, his mind, and his will. So without knowledge of that, how are we going to accomplish things for him? So, by the time Joseph saw his brothers during the great famine, he had been in Egypt for 22 years. 22 years. And this was when his dreams came to pass, 22 years later. There's three specific prophecies that have been spoken over me, and they were all given within a few months period, all by different individuals in different places. But they're all very similar. And go in one just a little more detailed than the other one. Okay, it's been 14 years now. I know those dreams, that word is for an appointed time, and I know it's coming. But it hasn't come yet. But I can't forget. You know, I can't let things stop me concerning that. And I'll pull them out. I've written them down and printed them off, and I'll pull them out, and I'll read them. And I'll go over them. But see, I have to prepare myself also. I have to prove myself faithful. I have to know the word. I have to build a trust between my Father and myself. I have to build a confidence between the Father and me, that a confidence that I have in him. Not, you know, he has to have confidence in me too, but I have to have confidence in him that whatever he says to me to do, I'll do it. Because I know that he is faithful to perform if I will but obey him. So Jacob sent his sons over to Egypt. He hears there's food in Egypt. So he sends his sons over to Egypt. Judah is back with the brothers by that time. They all go over to Egypt. And so they're ushered in before the prime minister. Well, Joseph recognizes them. They don't recognize him, though. They haven't seen him since he was 17 years old. Probably a spindly, gangly teenager. And now he's a 39-year-old man. Looks like an Egyptian. Has an Egyptian name. Is dressed in the robes of royalty. Because he's second in command of the country, and he's using an interpreter to communicate with them. What if that was you standing there before your brothers? Well, I'm sure all that stuff came back and just flooded them. I'm sure it did because, let's go back over to Genesis here, chapter 42. Just a couple scriptures I want you to read. 6 through 20. Yeah. 21 through 24. Chapter 42, 21. And so, in the meantime, Joseph, you know, starts talking to his... He's not real nice to him when he sees them. They don't know who he is, and he's not real nice to them. And so he accuses them of being spies and that they're going to be killed because they're spies. And so they're getting real upset. And he said, well, to prove you're telling the truth, and you say you have a brother back over there, you know, over there next door, I want you to go back and get him and bring him. And I'm going to keep one of you here. If you're not telling the truth, you're all dead, you know. So he gets pretty rough with him. And so his brothers, you know, are like, oh my God, you know. And they look at one another and they say, we are truly guilty concerning our brother. For we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us and we would not hear. Therefore the distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against this boy? You know, he was the one that came to his rescue, basically. He said, I told you so. We shouldn't have done this. And you wouldn't listen. Now here his blood's required on our hands, you know. And they're getting really upset and scared. They didn't know Joseph understood every single word they were saying. And it upset him so bad, he had to leave the room. He left the room, he wept, and then he had to come back. Okay? So, all those emotions and all that junk came flooding back in a huge wave, and I'm sure hit him in the face, you know? These brothers here, now what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Well, I experienced a situation along that line. Few years ago, I was it was with my family, and they had a farm up there that my brothers had. My brothers and I basically had inherited from the uncles, my dad's brothers. I didn't actually inherit any of the farm, but I was supposed to be given X amount of dollars from the produce, from the earnings of the farm. Well, that never came to pass, and it was a pretty large amount. And so, anyway, I was extremely patient for 20 years, and then we happened to be in Michigan about 3 or 4 years ago, and Charlie just innocently asked the nephew, "Well, what you farming these days, or something like that? You know, how are crops going?" And he looks at us and goes, "Oh, we sold the farm 5 years ago." Did not even have a clue this happened. I was never given my inheritance. I was nothing. Nothing was ever said by anybody. Well, that was so devastating to me after I found that out. We found that out on the second day we were up there. We had an entire week there. And so I can't even tell you. The raging. All I know is Charlie knows when we were by ourselves, I cried all the time. I cried the whole time I was up there. I just cried. I cried all the way home. I cried after I got home. I was crying. I was going, why didn't they tell me? Why couldn't they have told me? Why, you know, it was just like beyond me. And I let that thing fester. I let that thing fester and I let it grow. And I finally confronted my mom a few months after that. And she said, well, it was none of my business. And I was just like, Okay, all right. And I cut off all communication at that point. I thought, okay,
I was always considered the black sheep anyway after I got born again. They never understood, and it was just like one thing led to another. And so for, I'm lost track, probably 2 or 3 years, I did not have any communication with my family, period. It was just, I thought, it's just better this way. I have my life. They don't agree with it. You know, they think I'm nuts, have gone off the deep end. I wasn't disrespectful to my folks or anything like that, but I thought, it's just the best that it's like this. Okay. All this stuff comes flooding back to me. It was probably like after 2 years of this, you know, when you go around your mountain again and, you know, God will start dealing with you about little things. And, I mean, I wasn't hateful with them, anything like that. It was just like it was better just to be separate. They didn't, you know, that's what they chose and this is what I'm choosing. But it, because of me venting to my mother and being so upset and then her saying those things, it came to the point of where I talked it over with Charlie and I said, you know, I really feel like the Lord's speaking to me to go ahead and to write my parents, tell them I'm sorry for venting, telling them I'm sorry for going off on them. You know, it was nothing towards them. I was just extremely, extremely upset for not being told, being kept in the loop of things. And so I did. It was just a short note, but I did. And then I told them, I said, I feel like I'm supposed to write my brother and his wife and release them totally of all the obligation of the inheritance. Just release them. Because I, you know, the Lord got to ministering to me. He said, you know, even though that looks like a lot of money to you, he said, that's nothing but a drop in the bucket to me. Nothing but a drop in the bucket. He said, so release them totally of that obligation towards you and just let me work. Then it's back in their ballpark and you're released of everything. And so that's what I did. That's what I did. And, you know, it was after that point, I started having an expectancy start rising up every now and then. I'd tell Charlie, and it was like over a year, year and a half period. I'd tell him at different times, I said, change is coming to our life. I said, change is coming. I said, I can just sense it. Change is coming. I don't know what kind of change it's going to be. I don't know what's going to happen. I just know change is coming because the Lord would give me certain scriptures. And then certain little songs, just choruses, would pop up, like that one from Richard Roberts, something good's going to happen, you know, about to happen. And I could just feel it coming my way. And I couldn't remember the whole song. I used to know, but I couldn't. But just this little chorus would keep popping up. And then, you know, it'd kind of subside for a while. And then it'd come back again. And this went on for a year and a half. And then all this stuff started happening about, we find this house, extremely good deal that we get. You know, we have our place up for sale down there. We're invited to this church. We have, you know, after 12 years in Tahlequah, you know, the Lord finally opened up a place where we felt that we could be with the like-mindedness and everything. And it was just, you know, changes started coming. Joseph, the same way. He had a choice with his brothers there before him. Forgiveness. Also, besides keeping his eyes on his goals and those dreams, forgiveness had to be a part of it. Because if he got into bitterness and unforgiveness and anything else and stayed there, those dreams would not have come true at all. Way back before even his brothers had arrived, he had forgiven them in his heart. But then he had a choice because the enemy brought it all back to him at that moment. Am I going to continue to walk in forgiveness here? Or am I going to choose just a moment of my own vindication? But he chose. He put him through a little bit. He made him go back and get, you know, Benjamin. But he made the decision to forgive. And so on the brother's second trip back, when they brought their little brother back, Joseph revealed himself to them. And they wept. They were kind of like,
Oh, but Joseph told them what you meant, what the enemy meant, what you meant for evil. God turned for good and saved you in the land of Israel, saved our people because of it. All because of Joseph's attitude toward this whole 22 years of going through this living hell at times. He chose to keep his attitude, his heart right before God, even when he had the choice to turn and take revenge himself. He chose not to. And because of that, even Pharaoh heard about it. He was weeping so loudly over his brothers. Pharaoh heard him. Pharaoh heard about him and was so overjoyed that he was reunited that he gave him the best area in the land of Egypt, the land of Goshen, and said, bring your family over here and let them stay here. The very best of the land. So God just blessed abundantly. All because Joseph was obedient. Joseph kept a right heart. He allowed God to transform him into a vessel that he could use to save a people. Who knows what God will do through one of us or each of us if we will keep ourselves right before him. Your dreams and visions are for an appointed time. Your job is to hang on to what God has shown you and given you. It's God's job to bring it to pass. Don't abort your vision, no matter how rough it may seem, how hard it may be at times. Do not give up on what God has told you and shown you. Let's just flip over to Romans 12, verse 2, real fast here. Allow God to reveal and transform you out of anything that stands between you and him. Romans 12, 2 says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Like I was saying, you have to read the Word. You have to know the Word. You have to have knowledge of the Word, because the Word is the Father's and Jesus' heart, mind, and will for each one of us. The Word really is the only thing we have. Really, the only thing worth having, the only thing we have. We can make it in this life with the Word if we will allow the Holy Spirit to bring the revelation of it to us. So I encourage you, spend as much time in prayer as you can, as much time in worship as you can, fast when you can, choose to, read the Word, and just never, ever, ever give up on those dreams and those visions he's placed in your heart.